What's up, Nets fans? Welcome to another episode of the Brooklyn Buzz, presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, the Australian legend, Jack Manuel. What's up, Jack?
Always good to upset some Heat fans, including Gabrielle Union, Nick. But couldn't back it up against the Pistons. But two out of three ain't bad, as they say.
Yeah, 1-1 in the last two, last time we chatted. But just as a reminder, you can listen to the Brooklyn Buzz on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and now airing on Dash Radio. But let's start with the Miami game, Jack. Like you said, it's always good to get a win against the Heat, 110-109 in overtime in Miami. It was great. Caris LeVert had a huge, you know, clutch moments in overtime and in the fourth quarter. Rondé came up big. Obviously, there was the talk about D'Lo being benched. But what is your thoughts about winning a game in Miami that actually meant something to the Heat and the Nets were able to kind of upset them?
So hype, Nick. Just so hype. I was actually watching with my dad and my mom, and they almost had to leave the room. I was yelling so much. I'm getting everyone on board down here, but it was a great performance by everyone. You mentioned a few names there, and obviously, I put out on Twitter the fact that, like, you know, despite the win, I think the talk would be the whole D'Lo benching, and it was soon forgotten soon enough. But I think the performance itself was one of the best of the season. And I think that's the one that needs the most credit. Our defense was amazing going late. There were times when our offense was a bit lackluster, but I think we just grinded this one out. But Nick, where does this win rank for you across the season out of the other 25, 24?
It's really tough to say, obviously, because, you know, every win kind of feels better right afterwards. But I think it would probably have to go top three, top five in a sense, just because the Heat needed the win. You could argue that the Heat needed this win more than any other team, even though they're already in the playoffs. Like, seeding wise, every win matters for the East. And every other game the Nets won it, you could argue it really didn't matter that much, because especially the last few wins against, like, Orlando, Memphis, those teams are trying to lose. So getting a win against a team that's actually trying to win means a lot.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. I put out my Twitter page again to give myself a shout at the Chainman JVT. It was a top three win, just purely off the sense that in terms of the situation that it was in, we came up against a team that was looking to solidify its playoff chances, and we started off slowly. It seems to be a trend when it comes to our wins. We can't seem to really get the win and lock it away early unless it's against a lesser team. We seem to grind out these sort of wins. And I think against the Miami Heat team that is incredibly well coached, I think other than the talk of the game with D'Lo was the talk of Hassan Whiteside literally breaking Twitter with his comments in relation to his benching. But just to go against him, Jared Allen was probably outperforming him and he was benched. Obviously, as a rookie, he could understand. But when we went small, that was when we sort of started to really feel it offensively and get that ball moving. And, you know, the assist numbers, 28-19, sort of proved that.
Yeah, I think it was a great team effort. Seven guys in double digits. You know, you mentioned the team defense, 11 steals. It was nice to see the Nets get out on the break too, 19 fast break points. Like, just overall good energy. And, like, I felt like in the first half, the Heat kind of challenged the Nets in the sense, like, they were a more physical team. They were kind of bruising and kind of being tough. The Nets got to the line a lot, but they still were down. And then in the second half, I felt like the Nets responded. They had a big third quarter, and they really grinded out, like you mentioned. It was just really good to see the big performances from some of the young guys.
Yeah, and we mentioned Caris LeVert. Spencer Dinwiddie, we said about him, were we worried about his performances going forward? You know, I mentioned the fact that I thought he was due for a big one, and he came up big in this game against Miami. Certainly wasn't his best performance of the season, but, you know, it was just one of those performances that came at the right time that we needed from Spencer. Obviously, with the absence of D'Lo being on the bench there, it was great to see him sort of have that sort of statement performance and go, look, I'm still here, guys. I'm still making an impact. And, you know, him alongside Caris LeVert, they were outstanding in the backcourt. Rondé was just, you know, full of so much juice. I feel like he felt like he was going to get scurvy. He had so much vitamin C in him. He was that good. And it was just a great performance from the team as a whole. Like you mentioned, seven players over 10 points. That's what we need. I think that's when the Nets look their best, when you get those team performances. Because a lot of the time, and this is no slight to some of the other players, like whether it's a Spencer Dinwiddie or whether it's a D'Lo, when those guys have their sort of huge nights, whether it's like a triple-double or a huge scoring performance, it takes away from the team as a whole. And in ways, we never really get the wins in a lot of those. Like, a lot of D'Angelo Russell's great performances have come in losses. And that's just probably a virtue of the circumstances. But at the same time, when the team is performing well, and because we obviously had that sort of lack of talent depth, that's when we look our best.
Yeah, when you're not in the ISO situations, like you mentioned, talent-wise, the Nets don't have a ton of great ISO players. In the sense, when the team's moving well, moving off ball well, creating the defense, you know, in some weird situations, it kind of helps a lot. And I thought as well it was a really nice team win because Damari Carroll only had 2 points. He was 1-9 from the field, 0-5 from three. Now, in the beginning of the season, it felt like the Nets couldn't get a win unless Damari was playing or had a solid game. And the fact that they won the game with Damari having such a bad game, I think says a lot about the growth of the team.
It definitely does. And I think that it shows, like we saw, you know, D'Angelo Russell had 7 minutes. You know, Jared Allen only had 19 minutes. Damari Carroll was out there for a long time, 1-9 from the field. And he was still +9 in the box score and the plus minus. So he was clearly doing some good things. But in terms of, you know, offensively, I think it was just nice to have him out there and also see, you know, increased performances from guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, you know, Alan Crabb had his moments. It was just and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was in with 39 minutes. It was nice to see Coach Kenny Atkinson riding the guys a little bit. I think we said that in previous podcasts, that we wanted to see increased minutes from guys that were feeling it a bit. And Rondae certainly was, you know, 8 of 16 from the field, 20 points, 14 rebounds, including one offensive one as well, a couple of blocks, a couple of steals, a couple of assists. It was just one of those performances. And it was, you know, 35 minutes from Spencer Dinwiddie, 35 minutes from Caris LeVert. You know, good to see increased minutes from the guys that were giving us their all and were producing.
Yeah, Kenny kind of rolled with it, especially in overtime, you know, getting the extra minutes for those guys and not switching it out. Who for you had a bigger game, Caris LeVert or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson?
They both had their moments, Nick, and I think it's got to probably come down to Caris LeVert because at the end of the day, the ball handler is the one that sets up a lot of the play. The fact that he had a near triple-double, it was insane, and he was flirting with it and coming off the bench. And I mean, that can... obviously, you know, be a bit misguided in the sense that, you know, he still had 35 minutes and he came off the bench because D'Angelo Russell had 7 minutes. But his performance overall, you know, he had a block, he had a steal, he was engaged on both ends of the floor. Listening to the most recent episode of Dunked On, where they reviewed the young prospects of the Nets, you know, they gave some love to Caris LeVert, but I don't think that they saw the real defensive upside that he has. I think in terms of his length and in terms of his body, we've mentioned this numerous times, that he has the capacity to be a good defender. I've also, when we were, but at the other hand, I was also speaking to Nick during this game, that there's times where Caris can be a little bit clumsy in the fact that he gives away dinky little fouls fighting through the screen. So I think it's certainly a balance for him going forward. But if you know, you're going for Nets sort of fandom and you're going for Nets news, definitely come to the Buzz and guys like Nets Daily. Don't go to the blog boys, as Kevin Durant would like to call them, out in Dunkdown, because as much as they have, you know, great analysis, I think that they can be a bit misguided because I doubt that they would have watched as much Nets basketball as us Nets fans have.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the toughest thing about, you know, covering the NBA nationally. But in a sense, I agree. I think Caris had the bigger game. He had some really big clutch moments. He had that block at the end of regulation that kind of prevented the Heat from winning. Then he also hit a couple buckets in overtime. And then as well, his shot was the game winner that won the Nets a game. He's a guy I wouldn't mind seeing get the ball once in a while in late game situations or the game-winning shot. Like, I felt like, especially at the end of regulation, they went with Spencer Dinwiddie. Obviously, he's done it before. But I wouldn't mind seeing Caris get the ball in for that last shot, especially because he had some really nice, you know, moves and passes that game.
Yeah, I agree. I was almost very frustrated, to say the least, when Spencer Dinwiddie took that shot, because you could just see it coming. Now, it's not to say that he hasn't made that shot a few times this year, but he settles for it at times, and it's something that, you know, we as Net fans know he can do better with. Whereas Caris was taking the right shots, you know, 7 of 13 from the field, whereas Spencer Dinwiddie 4 of 12 from the field, go to the guy with a hot hand. And, you know, it's not that Caris LeVert was lights out, but he was making the right shots. He was making the right decision. Spencer Dinwiddie also had a nice double-double himself, 12 points and 12 assists. So it's not to say that he wasn't impacting the floor on different ends of the box score. But, yeah, Caris was one that was feeling it, and he was making the right shots. He was making the right passes, you know, on both ends, on the defensive, on offensive end. So, maybe going forward, you know, we've seen these last couple of games, we see, you know, Coach Kenny ride Caris a little bit. You know, he's a first round pick. He's a guy that we're looking to build around, and he's a guy that probably has one of the biggest upsides on this Nets roster. So certainly wouldn't be surprised if we see some big shots from Caris in the next couple of games.
Exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if he sees a minute jump. You know, I think he played a good amount against Detroit as well. But moving on to Rondé, you mentioned he had a great game as well. The energy was there. He was going at James Johnson a little bit. Obviously, James Johnson kind of ate him up in the fourth quarter and had that consecutive scoring run. But it's tough for Rondé out there, and he kind of fought through it. Had some big buckets in the end of fourth quarter and in OT as well. So, I mean, can't complain about it. It was nice to see kind of two guys that represent Brooklyn in the sense of like culture and the energy of the team, and just like they have that morale to them where you can kind of see when they weren't playing, the Nets had that terrible stretch in February, and having them out there definitely makes a difference for the whole squad.
Oh, it's absolutely massive, Nick. These two guys are leaders out there, especially Rondé. He's sort of embraced that leadership role in the sense that he's obviously still very, very young in terms of age, you know, only early 20s, but his experience with this Nets organization and, you know, the growth that he's shown this year. I had that piece, you know, it was at the start of the year. And I mean, if I was to write a piece now, I'll be coming out with the dealer piece very soon, summarizing his season as a whole. But his season has been absolutely outstanding. One of the most consistent performers. And there's been a lot of, again, comparing what the blog boy said, I'm going to steal a Kevin Durant line. He said that, you know, he lacked that sort of, they don't see where his fit is going forward in today's NBA. They didn't give enough love to his passing game, which I think Rondé, as we've mentioned plenty of times, that, you know, he's elevated himself there. They didn't mention enough his ability to get to the line. They were very just quick to just sort of just jump on the negatives and sort of had the fact that, you know, his defense has been less than they thought. They were very sort of tunnel vision wise with him. But Rondé, I think this game sort of played well into his hand. It suited his sort of style and his ability to sort of get down to those nitty-gritty little things, you know, get hard on the boards, show that real hard sort of offensive and defensive energy. And it's sort of, he was the guy that sort of set the tone on both ends, especially in the front courts. When we went small ball, I think Rondé was a key part of when we sort of started to hit that run in the second and third quarters. So a huge game from him and Karras. I think there's some good signs going forward for these two boys.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, the versatility of Rondé is somewhat underrated in a sense. He allowed the Nets to kind of match up with the Heat in different situations where other teams might struggle with somebody like James Johnson not having a matchup for him. Even though he did have a big stretch, Rondé was able to kind of keep him quiet for a lot of the game, and other, you know, power forwards and kind of threes out there. A lot of switching for the Nets. And like we've mentioned, switching for their defense could be something that could benefit them in the future. I wouldn't be surprised if Kenny makes some switches in terms of the defense in the summertime. But sadly, we got to talk about D'Lo being benched. And, you know, like you said, it kind of got swept under the rug after the game. And then they played last night and he played his normal minutes and stuff. What were your thoughts on him getting benched? Obviously, 7 minutes, 0 of 5, 0 of 3 from the 3-point line, as well as 2 turnovers.
Yeah, it wasn't the best start from D'Lo, to say the least. Shout out to Flatbush from Atlantic. He was at the game. He posted some really good stuff, some really nice insight. You know, he showed why was D'Lo going to the bench. Showed some nice photos. He was obviously right there in the action. But we say teaching moment. And I think a lot of Nets Twitter sort of echoed our sentiments in the fact that whatever Coach Kenny was doing, it wasn't really going to come out to us in the media. It wasn't going to be saying like, look, he was benched because he was taking bad shots and I needed to teach him a lesson. That was never going to happen. It was always going to be, I'm riding the hot hand with Karras and Spencer. And I mean, to an extent, he kind of was, but I'm guessing there was a lot more to it. And I think, you know, for credit to D'Lo, you know, taking it on the chin, you know, he was still quite hyped when the boys were doing well, when, you know, Karras was making his that game winner, so to speak. So it was just a credit to sort of the morale and the maturity of D'Lo to sort of be able to go, look, I'll take this. He came back against the Pistons, put in an okay performance. I think it's... And a lot of people are questioning Coach Kenny's decision and the reasoning behind it. I think there's a lot of D'Angelo Russell fanboys out there that probably weren't a huge fan of it. I didn't mind it. At the end of the day, we won the game. And I think a lot of fans really need to focus on the fact that a win is more important than seeing, you know, a triple-double from D'Angelo Russell. Yes, he had one of his best performances of the year in the past sort of couple of games. But at the end of the day, we won the game and D'Lo only played 7 minutes. And if that's the case, then I'll take the W any day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like other young guys didn't play. It's not like they benched D'Lo and played some like 37-year-old point guard. LeVert saw most of the extra minutes and he really played well. Like you said, Dinwiddie had some nice stretches as well. And like, D'Lo got benched, and people are like, oh, Kenny's overreacting. He treats D'Lo a certain way. Usually you do treat your star players a certain way. You know, they have high hopes for D'Lo. And I think the fact that he made the same mistakes, you know, some things that Kenny, like, gets pissed off on, shooting too many threes, taking bad shots, turnovers, trying to force things instead of going with the flow of the offense, I think he got upset with him, and he was just like, all right, we're going to, you know, send a message to you, and we're going to bench you. You know, is that necessarily the best way to go? Should he have played in the third quarter? Maybe. But at the end of the day, like you said, the Nets got the W. He played the next game. It's not really that big a deal. Like, that big a deal.
It's not. And you mentioned the fact that we both thought that he would have come back in the third quarter. The third quarter is where we won the game, 32-21. And that's when we saw the biggest increase. I think if D'Lo is out there, no shade to him, I think that we probably wouldn't have had that, you know, that increased third quarter. I think because D'Angelo would have probably had to feel himself a little bit, get himself into the groove a little bit as he likes to, as all NBA players like to when they're sort of finding themselves, you know, getting the increased minutes and finding their sort of rhythm. But we won the game. And I think, you know, for Nets fans to be pragmatic in that sense, you know, getting the W is a lot more important. And I think one game in the space of 82, obviously D'Lo has missed some because of injury. I think, you know, it'd just be nice to be a bird, a fly on the wall and hear what the conversations with D'Lo were following the game in the locker room and in the sort of scouting report and in the video room and all those sort of things. Because as fans, we love that insight. But at the end of the day, sometimes we have to put two and two together and sort of make some assumptions, which can be obviously a little bit misleading at times. But when I think the Nets obviously like to sort of maintain a certain narrative, a consistent narrative, which is going forward. And yes, like there is truth to it, but at the same time, it's certainly not the full story. And I don't think we ever are going to get that full story unless you are a Nets insider or unless you are a boy with D'Angelo Russell. I think some really silly people were posting the fact that, like, you know, D'Lo was out and joined the Miami nightlife the night before. And I think it's quotes and tweets and opinions like that can really be misleading, especially in an age right now where, you know, you can post whatever you want and someone thinks that it has a validity to it. So, you know, we take what we have at face value, and I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, and to be honest, I wouldn't throw that completely out of the window, that he maybe was hungover or he was out too late in Miami or something along those lines, or like he just didn't come to play and he was tired and fatigued. Like, there could be, you know, 100 different reasons that we really don't know about. So it's just all assumptions at this point, unless like Kenny were to come out and be like, yeah, D'Angelo tweaked his ankle in the game or something. We'd all kind of, you know, be relieved. But like we said, it kind of got swept under the rug. He played the next game. The Nets did lose at home to Detroit, 108-96. And they just didn't have the juice in this game, like Kenny said. I was so happy he used the term juice. I don't know. I always use that. And he said it, no juice, 12 of 43 from three, got out rebounded 60-48. Just not a strong performance from the team. You probably could make an assumption that they were a little bit fatigued from the overtime game in Miami, and it was a very physical game against Miami as well.
Well, hugely physical, and I really liked it as well. As soon as I saw him use it, I'm like, Nick's going to love this shit. And I think he might be listening to the buzz a little bit too much. Subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Blog Talk Radio. But yeah, for a game where the Nets are such, you know, high scoring in terms of being able to get like some big 30-point quarters, you know, our highest quarter was that first quarter. And we mentioned the fact that we might have been lacking a bit of energy. You know, it certainly wasn't showing that first quarter where we were, you know, certainly keeping up with them 33-28. But those second and third quarters, you know, 20 and 22-point performances, you know, it's not enough to really get a W in today's NBA when you're scoring so little on the offensive end. I think it was just one of those days where, you know, the Pistons had a bit of rest. They had a bit more talent in terms of Andre Drummond. Yes, they didn't have Blake Griffin. I don't know what the hell Ish Smith was drinking.
he was balling.
He was balling in his 17 minutes. You know, Reggie Jackson hurt us as well. But I think this team was just a little bit more well rested and had just a little bit more talent than we did. Also, nice to see a guy like Stanley Johnson go well, because we obviously monitor his progress because we were watching him in the preseason. Nice sort of shooting night from him. Not necessarily the best from three, but, you know, a lot of these guys like, you know, Stanley Johnson, Justice Winslow. Just a quick off-track one, Nick. Would you rather have Stanley Johnson or Justice Winslow in a Nets uniform next year, if it were to happen as a hypothetical?
That's a very tough question, to be honest. Stanley Johnson's really struggled from three, where Winslow's had a nice season from three. He hasn't shot a ton of attempts. And also, I really like what I saw from Winslow in that game against the Nets. I've watched the Heat a little bit over the last few weeks, and I think he's starting to get some of that athleticism back. You saw a couple big blocks. Defensively, he's the kind of guy I think you love to have around, because he really could just annoy the shit out of somebody. And Stanley Johnson, there is some question marks. He's been in the doghouse, where Winslow, like, he got in the doghouse a little bit, but I think it was more so because of injury. So I think I might go with Winslow. Yeah, it's a tough one, to be honest.
It is. And I think under Coach Kenny, I think both of these guys could thrive. Stanley Johnson screams Wondell Hollis Jefferson as soon as you see him. Both of these guys, you know, are very young, 22 and 21 years old. And they have some people have compared Justice Winslow to a light Draymond Green. I don't think that he has the passing ability by any stretch. I think Justice Winslow has a huge defensive ceiling. And, you know, he was making a couple of three-point shots against our Nets. And I saw that. I'm like, I wouldn't mind seeing that in the black and white. And, yeah, he was, you know, he's huge on the defensive end. He would immediately come in and make an immediate defensive impact. He would be our best defender. He'd have, you know, certainly... If we were going, like, across a lot of the free agents this year, like, you know, Jabari Parker, Aaron Gordon, all these sort of guys, I'd probably have Justice Winslow at the top of that list just because of... his fit in today's, you know, NBA, and his fit in a Nets uniform would just be absolutely pristine.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's pretty close though with Stanley Johnson, because I will say he's improved a little bit as a driver. Like, he's gotten in the paint a little bit more. So that jump shot is kind of off, because there was a few times against the Nets last night, and he's just like a strong dude. Like, I've seen guys kind of go at him and be surprised how strong he is and kind of bounce back. So, like, either guy I think would be great, and Winslow wouldn't be a bad guy either, depending on how much attention he's getting in free agency as well.
Yeah.
So, like we said, like, any type of these guys that maybe teams are kind of sleeping on, or they don't really want to shell the money out, the Nets might take a chance on.
Definitely. And I think the key for the Nets is going to be that sort of stretch four. And Stanley Johnson, we mentioned, can't really hit the three. I think it'd be just like having two Rondes out there. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because Rondes had a great season. But I think, you know, the point that I give to Justice is the fact that he's improved that three-point shot. And if And it's huge. If we would have both of those guys out there on the floor, at least Justice has the ability to sort of space it a little bit and sort of space it in a way where it leaves some extra, you know, interior presence for a guy like Rondé, so he can sort of play his mid-range game. But who knows? Next season, Rondé could turn into Justice Winslow in that fact, because there was talks last season that Justice Winslow was, you know, if he never found that three-point shot, he would never find his footing in today's NBA. This year, yes, he's... attempts, as you mentioned, Nick, haven't been astronomical, but he's nailing the shot that he needs to. So I think that's one step that Rondé could sort of take. And maybe in the fact that we might not get that big free agent sort of signing, that Rondé could sort of be the guy that we sort of need him to be.
Yeah. Honestly, like I mentioned to you before and on previous episodes, I don't really care if they make a big, you know, offseason signing. Don't sign a guy just to sign a guy. They've been smart in the past, and they've kind of waited. Like, they went for Otto Porter. They didn't get him. They didn't go waste their money on something. They did some smart moves, and that's the same thing I kind of expect this offseason. But talking about that Detroit game real quick, getting back to that, what do you think was the issue with Reggie Jackson and Ishmael just dominating the Nets? Like, they're not – no offense to them. Like, Reggie Jackson's coming back from injury. Ishmael's been a bench player his whole entire career. Why do these guys kill the Nets? Is it just like lack of defense, energy, effort, or, you know, there's something that Detroit kind of exposed of the Nets?
I think it's a little bit of everything, Nick, and it's a cop-out to say that, but I think when it's D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Caris LeVert had some huge minutes last night, so I think for him, that probably, you know, played into the fact that, you know, subconsciously he just probably didn't have the effort that he needed to against some guys that are capable NBA players. And I think when it comes to experience, you know, in today's NBA, and against youngsters like the ones that we have, you know, it shines through. Ishmael has been around the league for a long time. Reggie Jackson's been around the league for a long time. And they're going to take advantage of the fact that, you know, D'Angelo Russell has some glaring weaknesses on the defensive end. And I think, you know, obviously, it probably plays into the fact that it was a team defense as well. These guys, you know, were just at will doing what they wanted in transition, and, you know, making shots left, right, and center. So I think it's definitely not just about Court's fault, but it certainly has left a lot to be desired. The fact that, you know, they weren't necessarily engaged for the requisite amount of time. And I think D'Lo would certainly put it on himself in saying that, you know, I think he needs to to get a little bit of a little bit more aggression in, and a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder. We speak about guys like Damian Lillard, Russell Westbrook. These guys have this sort of aggressive, this mean side to them. I think D'Lo can at times be a little bit blasé in the way that he plays the game. And it's not necessarily in terms of anything to do with his talent. It's more a mentality. And I think mentality and how you approach the game is as important as what you actually have and can bring to the court, because this, you made the NBA. All these guys are talented. All these guys can hoop. But it's what you can bring beyond that, that sort of separates you. And I think for D'Lo to sort of increase his worth, I feel like he needs to sort of, you know, stay mentally engaged and, you know, sort of get that little bit of chip on his shoulder, because, you know, there's all these people writing him off left, right, and center. We talked about the guys from Dunked On, but there's guys in LA that are writing him off. I think we coddle him a little bit too much as Nets fans at times, because, you know, we want so much for him, but, you know, he's got to go out there and sort of have that little bit of aggression and sort of go, you know, this is me. I'm gonna take the game by the scruff of the neck and go bang. But that's just a little bit of a thing that I think could certainly take his game to the next level.
I think the aggressive mentality, kind of taking advantage of being a bigger guard, which I've mentioned on this show before. Also, I feel like when I watch D'Angelo in the big games and the big moments he has, he always looks confident in attacking, you know, his defender. Where so in times where he has bad games, he's kind of like unsure and he's not really attacking. He's kind of being a little bit more passive. And you saw that a little bit last night when Reggie Jackson kind of bumped him a little bit. Like, instead of going at him or trying to get back in, you know, in there, like, D'Angelo kind of backed up and kind of faded away a little bit sometimes and kind of stayed in the perimeter. I think he's at his best when he's in the lane. I think upon, you know, putting on muscle, obviously he needs some work on his layup package. He needs to finish inside better, as well as I think a post game could be in his advantage when he has some of these smaller guards. If they're going to take advantage of him with their quickness, he needs to take advantage of his size. So I think there's just a few areas where D'Angelo can really improve. And like, you're right, Jack. I think Nets fans do coddle him a little bit, but also I think people are so easy to like write off young kids, and he just needs to really develop with the Nets, and they just need to try to change his mindset in a sense and his decision-making a little bit. And I think it can happen. It's not like the issues in his game can't be fixed. You know what I mean? There's plenty of ways to fix issues in his games. Things, same thing with Caris LeVert. Rondé's big question is 3-point shot. Jared Allen, there's a lot of ways to improve his game. So I think there's a lot of positives in a sense. And I think Nets fans just have a lot of confidence in the staff.
Yeah, and I certainly do as well. You know, and speaking of Jared Allen, he had a really nice night. 15 points, 6 rebounds, 3 blocks. That dude is just... What was the stat that you posted on Twitter in terms of, was it offensive win shares, Nick?
I believe it was win shares in general for rookies, and he was in the top 10. And I think I posted a tweet, I want to say maybe a week and a half ago, maybe a week ago, and Jared Allen was like top 5 in the Nets in a lot of major categories, like win shares, offensive win shares. Like, he's definitely been playing great. And he kind of hit that rookie wall, and now he just kind of jumped right over it.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, he's putting on highlight packages as well. Like,
yes.
The length and the dunks that he's putting on, you know, I feel like, you know, we've had a lot of talk in terms of Karras and D'Lo, but, you know, Jared Allen, his last sort of week or so has been, you know, he sort of smashed that rookie down and then some. He's certainly, I think he's probably got one of the biggest upsides. The blog boys, the Dunkle boys compared him to Clint Capella, but with a little bit more athleticism in that sense, but, you know, a little bit less on sort of the offensive end. I think he's
I don't agree with, I don't think. I don't think I agree he has less than Clint Capella offensively, in the sense that I've seen Jared Allen already make nice passes, and he hit a step back three against Detroit. Like, I think his jump shot is going to really surprise people. I don't know if it'll happen next year, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it in 2 years.
Yeah, and I think the jump shot and his free throw percentage and his free throw shooting in general, generally, the free throw percentage is what dictates how you are as a jump shooter. It's reasons why that we sort of have a little bit of faith in a Rondé, because he's pretty good from there. But for Jared Allen, there was while he was being scouted, he was said to be like, you know, that was his number one thing. He was like DeAndre Jordan from the line. He's killed it from there, and he's sort of he's proved the naysayers wrong. And you know, that James Herbert piece that we were talking about in the last episode, it showed, like, you know, all his mentality is one thing that I really like. You know, he goes under the radar a little bit. He does his thing, but at the same time, you can tell he has that desire to
the
be
edge.
The edge. Yeah, the desire, the edge.
It's almost a Kawhi type edge in a sense. I'm not saying he's going to be Kawhi Leonard, but the way that Kawhi kills quietly somewhat similar to the way Jared Allen kind of works at his game, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see that moving forward. I don't think he'll ever be a guy that gets a dunk and screams. Like, he just seems like, you know, he's just like, he's just level-headed.
He is, and for a guy that's only, you know, 19 years old, it's one thing. I feel like, you know, we're seeing so many things out of him that we didn't expect, and we're probably saying the same thing about Rondé, but, you know, I feel like he, out of all the young guys on the roster, he's the one that's exceeded the expectations
the most,
yeah, quite easily. And I think that's a real positive to have that from your rookie. And it's probably not only a credit to him, but the Nets staff in general, because, you know, we got that pick again from the Raptors, and it's a sort of similar range to a Karras and a Jared Allen type. So I feel like if we draft well and we find the right guy, then hopefully we see the same sort of output from whoever that prospect might be. But Jared's been amazing, and, you know, we still got a couple more games to see some highlights from him.
Exactly. He has been great, and you just like to see the development. And I think his fit in the NBA in terms of being such a mobile big will really help the Nets as well, where a lot of these centers are having trouble playing big minutes, like Hassan Whiteside, like you mentioned, because of his lack of mobility. Obviously, Allen didn't play big minutes, but in the future, I don't think, you know, Kenny would be like, oh, I can't play Jared Allen against James Johnson, especially if he keeps the mobility while he adds the size. So nothing but a bright future for Allen. And like you said, the Nets have, you know, they do have another late first round pick. I wouldn't also be surprised if they'd use, you know, maybe Spencer Dinwiddie or Carroll or Lynn to possibly move up in the draft a little bit. Lynn in the sense of being an expiring. So there's a lot of possibilities. Sean Marks is a clever guy.
He's very clever. And, you know, we trust the progress, as the Nets have sort of coined a little bit, us Nets fans. But yeah, I feel like you've mentioned plenty of times, and I'm sure, you know, if you, it'd be naive to think that, like, you know, the Nets aren't going to be making moves. And I feel like, you know, there isn't a guy who wouldn't know more than a guy like you, Nick. So definitely, exactly. If there is a guy that, you know, make sure you're following him at OTG Nick, because the stuff that he posts, whether it be videos or Nets analysis, it's top notch.
Give Jack a follow as well. I appreciate that. As always, the J-Man at JBT. We'll be talking Nets, obviously, for the rest of the season as well. I'm going to start getting into draft stuff a little. And like I've mentioned in the past, you want NBA playoff talk, we have a lot of great stuff coming on otgbasketball.com, including podcasts, articles, roundtables, all types of great stuff. But thank you for listening. As always, Jack, thank you for hopping on. You can always catch a show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, otgbasketball.com.